Welcome to the Cigar Lounge, the official podcast of the Cigar Peg, where you get to know your friends a little better, learn a little bit more about each other, and grow as a community. And today we welcome into the Cigar Lounge Bill Humbert, the recruiter guy. Hey, Bill, how are you this morning?
Great, Joe. How about yourself?
Absolutely wonderful. It's good to talk to you. I want to start the way I always do, which is let's tell everyone a little bit about what it is that you do.
You know, a lot of people have asked me that question. My business is really interesting. I am the Google and Bing number one ranked talent attraction consultant. And I checked last night on Google, I'm actually the number one, two, and sixth ranked talent attraction consultant. And on Bing, I'm one, two, and three ranked talent attraction consultant. And what I do is I consult with companies to help them make the conversion or transformation from talent acquisition, where they pretty much drive the best candidates away, to talent attraction, where they have a line of the best candidates out in front of their company.
Now, let me interrupt, because you just said you're number one on Bing, Google, and all that. Whatever. So search engines. I guess what I'm curious is that where your work comes from?
Now it is.
Okay.
Because people are doing search on talent attraction, where before they were doing searches on recruiting, recruitment, talent acquisition.
Okay.
And so they're doing that and they're spotting me and then they're asking for conversations with me.
Okay. All right. Just kind of curious. I didn't know if that's something people are searching or if you had a network. How did you get started in all this?
Well, funny story, Joe. In 1980, we moved from just outside of Baltimore to New Windsor, Maryland, which is up in North Central Maryland.
Okay.
And I was working at that time in construction in downtown Washington, D.C. I was a construction superintendent. And I decided I didn't want to suffer through 65 miles of the best rush hour D.C. had to offer.
Okay.
And so I started looking for another job or another career. And my neighbor suggested Danny Rook was starting a fertilizer business nearby. Would I be interested in working as a sales guy? I said, sure. Okay. So I went down to Danny Rook's farm and he started explaining fertilizer to me and then said around 3:30, why don't you just go out and talk to some farmers, come back tomorrow and tell me what you learned.
Okay.
Well, Joe, I grew up a mile outside of Washington, D.C. I played street football. Go behind the Chevy, I'll hit you. So in New Windsor, the New Windsor area is mostly dairy farms back then. And I started driving down the back roads and looking up the lanes. And there was, you know, there was no cars to be seen because that was the time when the farms were beginning to consolidate.
Okay.
Finally, at 4:30, I found a lane that had cars and John Deere tractors sitting out there. So I went up that lane, got out of the car, and I heard some music playing in an outbuilding. Well, 4:30 is milking time.
Okay.
I walked into the milking barn, and the farmer was on a three-legged stool cleaning the udder of a cow, and I proceeded to walk up behind the cow and started talking to him about Danny Rook's fertilizer business.
Okay.
The cow's tail went up. I'd seen the tail of dogs go up, tail of cats go up. It had no special significance to me. Fortunately, the farmer looked up, grabbed me by the shoulder, ripped me out of the way, just to miss the shower that was about to hit me.
Oh, God. Yeah, I'm a city boy. I didn't even know what was coming.
Neither did I.
Oh, God.
And so he looked up and he said, "City kid, huh?" I did that for about a year and a half. And okay. A friend of mine came up to me and he said, "Have you ever thought about being a recruiter?" And I said, "No, why?" "You'd make a lot more money."
Okay.
And that was 1981, end of 1981. And I said, "Yeah, let's try this out." And since then, I've been recruiting, speaking on career search.
Okay.
I've written 3 books on finding a job. My most recent one, Expect Success, The Science of the Over 50 Career Search, received a 5-star review.
Okay.
And I know my professors up in heaven were going, "Humbert got a 5-star review? What?"
Well, now, did you have an agency or how did this all work out?
I worked for the first 6 months for a new recruiting firm. And the problem was he didn't, well, you know, 1981 was not a good time. 1982, we were in a bad recession that made 2008 look like it was a better recession. And then plus we had the interest rates because of inflation. To buy a car, you had to spend 18% on the loans. So my first company that I went to work for went out of business. And then I got a position with the consortium in Bethesda, Maryland, and there were 2 offices, New York City and Bethesda. And I started making successful introductions with them. But that was another one of those long drives down towards DC. And I ended up getting another position about 2.5 years later with a company in Rockville, Maryland that was, okay, was closer to my house. And within a year, I led the company in fees, and that's the way it's been ever since.
All right, well, how did you end up? I mean, was this always something, I guess, speaking? Is that always something you just did as part of this? Or how did that come into it?
It was. You know, I found that if I... probably in 1993, I was on a recruiting contract with MCI, and I discovered that companies started at that point, maybe before they were doing it, but I was recruiting IT folks at that time, and they had career fairs. And so I contacted the career fair companies and asked them if they would like me to speak to the candidates before the career fair started on the secret of finding a job.
Okay.
And in return, all I asked was that they give my company a free table. Nice. And that's what they did.
Okay. Got it. And how long did this all take? How long did this all last?
Oh, geez, probably close to 10 years with a lot of different companies. The MCI contract lasted from March of 92 to the end of August or end of September of 94.
Okay. All right. And tell me how that all wound down into what you're doing today and the publishing and all the writing and all that.
Well, I was an English major, so I have an English degree. I enjoyed creative writing.
Okay.
And I decided that, you know, it would be another way to get my name out in front of people.
Okay.
And I began writing blogs probably, 15, 20 years ago.
Okay.
And all of them were around either career search or talent attraction. And as I went through that, then it brought some attention to me. And in 2009, I told myself a lie. I had
okay.
I had nine chapter or nine blogs on career search, and I thought, you know what? All I got to do is stitch these blogs together. In about a week, I'll have a book.
Oh, okay.
And it doesn't quite work that way, but I did pretty well. In 3.5 months, I had a book, and I talked to two publishers. One of them wanted to publish it, and these were small publishers. These weren't the New York guys.
Right.
And they published my book, Recruiter Guy's Guide to Finding a Job. And that started the publishing side of my business. Since then, I've written two more books, and Employee 5-0, The Secrets of a Successful Job Search was another, and then Expect Success.
Okay. Did you always, I always ask this to people because I'm curious when someone writes, did you always want to be a writer? Was that something like you thought you were going to do when you were in school that you got such a degree or anything?
That's a great question. Yeah. I remember when Sister Mary Sunshine would say, you need to write a 500 word composition on whatever, and panicking and then counting every single word as I went along. So I'm not sure it came naturally for me.
Okay. Well, no, I was just curious because it just seems like so many people are popping out books and stuff like that. And for me, I never wanted to write a book in my life. So I get fascinated by people and what their motives are. So tell me about, how did you build what you have now, the speaking business? I mean, you're not doing actual outright recruiting anymore, correct?
No, I am doing recruiting.
Oh, you are? I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah, my last contract was last November. I got a call from my client that it has used me on contract 11 times since 1996.
Okay.
And he called one morning, and he didn't even say, hello, Bill. He said, I need you.
Okay.
And so I helped him identify and recruit a COO to run his growing small restaurant business in Iowa. And he's creating a chain of Via Sofia restaurants, and he needed a COO who understood the restaurant business to come and expand that business.
Okay. All right. And tell me, I'm curious, how do you, I guess I'm looking at this going, you started doing this before the digital age. How did you find people back then?
My job for the first 2 years, every single day, I had to have 40 conversations with either candidates or with companies.
Okay.
And I found the candidates. Some of them were given to me in a list that the owner of the recruiting firm was able to get somewhere.
Okay.
And then some of them were based off of referrals from them. So I was networking back in 1981.
And what today, what is the way that you are acquiring leads, people? How's that all working today?
Pretty much the same way, except that it's all automated, right? And, yeah. You know, and it's even getting more automated with AI.
Well, I guess, okay, and we'll talk about AI. I want to know about how that works in that industry. I guess what I'm wondering is, what have you found for you to be the best source of finding leads and finding people?
Well, finding leads, you know, I'm, as a member of Cigar Peg, Ed Rigsby has been great because he's one of my first association directors that I spoke with was somebody that he interviewed. And I heard the guy say, boy, it's so good being in Las Vegas in January. Iowa is terrible. Well, Joe, Iowa was one of our stops.
Oh, okay.
And it raised my antennae up, and I went, oh. So then I looked Jim up, and I found him and talked to him. And so now I've been writing quarterly articles for his Concrete Facts magazine.
Oh, okay.
And we're talking about possibly doing a breakout or a keynote, probably more a breakout session with them, because the keynotes, they tend to bring in the really big name speakers.
Okay. Well, and tell me about your, I guess, so you got this association, and I guess that means you're a member of Aiden and Ed's association group, correct?
That's correct.
Yeah. So beyond that, what kind of work were you doing? What's happening in the world for you right now?
So right now, you know, LinkedIn is obviously a way to find people, and actually even to find recruiting contracts.
Okay.
Because I've got almost 8,000 contacts, and most of them are, I'm fairly choosy about who I allow to be contact with me.
Okay.
And so that's a place where I find lots of people, but anymore, Google, Bing, using AI, Bing AI, you know, if you just write a good summary of what it is that you're looking for, AI pops that list out. It's pretty amazing.
And when you say, I want to ask, because people are still trying to figure this out, and I know there's people out there helping them, but when you ask a question to AI, do you have a thought process of how you do it, or what you do, or how do you think through what you're about to ask AI to tell you?
What I've learned from other people is that the more specific you get, the better response you get.
Okay.
And you don't just do a blank search, you know, I need COOs, or I need COOs in the restaurant business. You make it pretty detailed and force it to spend two more seconds to find the right person or people. So the more detailed a description you give it, the better result you get.
Got it. I'm laughing as you say that, because my standard rule of thumb has been that I treat AI like it is the worst intuitive employee I've ever had.
Yeah.
And you spell out exactly what you want, and eventually it will give you what you're asking for.
That's true.
You know, and that's just funny, because that's just been my rule of thumb with AI, is treat it like it's not that smart. Don't be intimidated by it.
Exactly. And really, it's not. You know, garbage in, garbage out has always been the rule.
Nope. True story. So tell us, on a daily basis, what is it that you're doing right now? I mean, how do you start your day? How do you function? What are you doing?
Well, when I start in the morning, I go through some mental exercises that I just, creative writing maybe or something, just to get the mind in the groove. And then I tend to go to my list of people that I want to call and start making some calls and following up on other calls. And then from there, I will create a post for LinkedIn. And depending on what's happened, I this morning I'm sending an article to a business journal in Iowa on the career search and the problems people have finding a job.
Okay.
And, you know, and I just go through the day doing my recruiting type, talent attraction type of work to create more awareness of my business, and then talking to potential clients, both, all three areas, the speaking side, the recruiting side, and then the career search side. So today, this afternoon, I'm meeting with a fellow who is an executive who's looking for a new position. So we're going to meet down in Salt Lake City, and I'm going to talk to him about what his search is and what he's trying to do, and ask him if he needs some coaching assistance.
And completely, I want to say a tangential. How did you end up in Utah?
Well, I started out in DC in Maryland,
Right, you said
Missouri.
that, and I missed somehow how you got to Utah. That kind of intrigues me.
Well, so in 94, my recruiting contract with MCI ended, and that contract I needed to help MCI transition a 200 member IT organization from Pentagon City, Virginia to Cedar Rapids, Iowa.
Okay.
And January 1st, 1993 to December 31st, 1993, we had to have a minimum of 120 IT professionals in seats in Cedar Rapids, Iowa,
Oh, okay.
before the internet.
Got it.
And so I was successful doing that. And as a matter of fact, we had 143 IT professionals in seats on December 31st. And over the next 8 months, I recruited another 80, and that helped them completely finish my contract. And then a startup in Iowa found out, it was pretty easy to find out given the number of people I was recruiting for Cedar Rapids, because Joe, we had to relocate the first year out of those 140, we had to relocate 90 IT professionals and their families to Cedar Rapids.
Wow.
So that was a huge contract. And then most of the other 80 was the same thing. And the startup found out about me, and they moved us lock, stock, and barrel from 30 acres in North Central Maryland to an eighth of an acre lot with a house in Marion, Iowa, outside of Cedar Rapids.
Yeah.
And I recruited for them for about 19 months before they went public. And literally the day they went public, I said, au revoir, thanks for the stock.
Nice.
And it was one of those things that was, I just had to do. So I stayed in Marion for, oh geez, until 2009.
Okay.
And in 2008, the state of Iowa decided to audit me. And it was interesting. They allowed somebody who was a competitor of me, or at least viewed me as a competitor, to write the sales tax rules on recruiting in 2005.
So, Bill, what you're telling us is that you're on the lam.
Sort of. No,
Okay.
actually.
Well, most wanted. There we go.
Exactly. Well, they got their pound of flesh and they lost me. And
Got it.
so
Got it.
they ended up putting sales tax on my total revenue for 3 years.
Wow.
And I ended up paying the state of Iowa $29,000. And I said, au revoir. And so we, Linda and I like snow.
Okay. All right. Yeah, you're
And
fair enough.
Linda's a Buffalo girl originally, so she's used to concrete snow as I am.
Okay.
And I went to New Hampshire and met with the economic development folks in New Hampshire, went to Park City, loved Park City, went down to Salt Lake, met the economic development folks for Utah, called up Linda from Park City and said, Park City or New Hampshire? And she said, no humidity. And I went, yes.
Nice. So, but let me add, because we all have moments where, you've obviously been fairly mobile in your career and you seem to find a way to get things done wherever you are. What do you do when you're feeling stuck? How do you get out of a rut?
Then I go back to the fundamentals.
Okay.
And, recruiting mirrors the sales process perfectly, line by line, step by step.
Okay.
And if you're talking about a process, then you go back to the process and you start doing what made you successful to begin with. And usually that's making phone calls.
Okay.
And once you start getting back into the practice of making those phone calls, then you pick up speed pretty quick.
Okay, so it's just about you dive right back in. It's just jump back in off the deep end and keep moving.
Right.
Okay. And That's good. Let me tell me in all that you're doing. I mean, obviously you've talked about the problem with the tax laws and everything else. What do you consider, and I want to focus on the speaking side of things, what do you consider to be one of the biggest mistakes you ever made?
Not listening to Ed Rigsby sooner.
All right, there you go, Ed. A plug for Ed. How beautiful is that? You know,
Ed's
we can
gonna
never
get choked
plug.
up just like you.
I'm just laughing, going, you know, we got to plug Ed. So, if you, with all your traveling, and I love asking this question, so I'm going to ask you, with all that you do, if you could go back in time and give your 16-year-old self some advice, what would that be, and what would it look like about starting your career over?
I would, well, one thing I would have done was tell my 16-year-old self to make enough money to buy Apple stock in 1980.
Well, there you go. I like that.
But I think, you know what, I'm pretty happy with the way things developed
Okay.
because I had a lot of great experiences in that time, and I made accomplishments that even today people didn't think. Well, there was heavy betting I wouldn't see the age of 21. Let's just say that.
Okay.
At age 20, I went to Assumption College in Worcester, Massachusetts, came home for Easter down to Maryland, and went to Easter Mass, came back, picked up the Washington Post, and saw a 4x5 ad from Greyhound saying they would get you from DC to LA in 5 days.
Okay.
And I thought, Greyhound can do it. I can do it.
Ha ha.
And so I set a goal to hitchhike from DC to LA in 5 days in 1969. And I structured my goal properly, and I recruited a guy from college that was a good buddy of mine. And in early at end of July, early August 1969, we started hitchhiking,
Okay.
and 5 days later we were in LA.
Nice.
And then we spent 3 days in LA, and then we set a goal to hitchhike to San Francisco in 24 hours. And this was a week after Sharon Tate and her friends were killed.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And we were in Santa Monica standing on 101 with a Frisco sign up. And this old Oldsmobile with four hippie chicks stopped. And the ones on the right were great recruiters. They got out and they put us in the center and leaned into us and say, "Hi, how are you? What's your name?" And I said, "Bill." And they said, "Where are you from, Bill?" "I'm from Washington, D.C., Jackson, Boston." "How'd you get out here?"
Oh,
"Oh,
God.
we hitchhiked in 5 days." "Oh, that's amazing. Does anybody know where you live or where you are?"
Oh,
I
God.
said, "No."
Okay.
20-year-old kid in a car with four girls.
Yep.
All risk analysis left. And they said, "We live on this ranch up in the mountains, and our leader gives us drugs every night, and we have sex, and we do fun things. You want to come up and join us?"
Oh my God, that's funny.
And so we got about a half a mile from the canyon road the Spahn Ranch was on, and the driver said, "So I'm going to turn about a half a mile. Do you want to come up with us to the ranch, or do you want to go on to San Francisco?" And my goal setting saved my life.
Okay.
I said to her, "You know, we set a goal to hitchhike to San Francisco because we want to stand on the corner of Haight and Ashbury."
Got it.
And she said, "Oh, that's such a great scene. Yeah, you need to do it." And they dropped us off.
Okay. So maybe let's go back a question, and maybe you would have told your 16-year-old self to not get in the car.
No. because that became a great part of the story.
Right? All right. Okay. Well, see, now I feel better because I believe everything should be done for the story. So I'm with you on that. I'm just checking on you.
Yeah.
I want to make sure that the story, then
the next year I did it again. I hitchhiked to Santa Barbara in 5 days and hitchhiked back in 5 days. And so for me, what that was proof that I could do things that were stretch goals that nobody else thought I could make.
Well, let me ask, I want to wrap this up with my final question, which is, if you had 10 times the budget you currently have to do whatever you wanted in your business, what would you spend that money on?
What I'm learning is that there is value to having somebody working with you who can do a lot of the handwork.
Okay.
And that will enable me to spend more time on vision and getting out and actually doing the sales work that I need to do.
Got it. And Bill, let me ask, because just for the people in Cigar Peg, since this goes to just us, if someone's looking to get in touch with you, what would be the best way for them to reach out, find you, and talk to you?
Well, my website is recruiterguy.com. And my homepage has a red button that says Speak with Bill. Just click on that and you're on my calendar.
So that's the easiest way for them to reach out and get you. That's awesome. Bill, I really appreciate you spending some time with us today. I think people will enjoy the stories and your cross-country escapades.
They were.
Thank you for being here. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Joe. It was fun. It was great talking to my friends at Cigar Peg.
You got it, man. We'll talk soon.
Okay, sounds good.
And we thank you, our listener members. Please join us every 2 weeks as we drop a new episode, placing another Cigar Peg member in the spotlight of the Cigar Lounge.